We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from The Big Issue, read by Brian Perkins.
In Amersham, police are clamping down on drunks who urinate through letterboxes. We've arrested several offenders, said one officer, all with extremely limp excuses.
Thanks to Gillian Sathanandan of Shrewsbury for that. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and comedian Nick Revel. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Nick Clark. And before we start round one, here's a notice from the Yorkshire Evening Post.
York RSPCA needs responsible people with a genuine love of animals to provide temporary foster homes for dogs. All applicants will be vetted.
Thanks to Edward Armitage of Haxby for spotting that one. Question one to Francis. Which former Welsher welshed on the Howard League?
Oh, yes, the Conservative Party. Remember them? Conservative MPs are going to have to elect a new leader. And you have to envy them, really, because they're spoiled for choice. We've got Michael Howard, Peter Lilly, I think John Redwood, Muffin the Mule, Clarence the Cross-Eyed Lion, that sort of thing. It's amazing. I mean, there are as many candidates as there are Tory MPs now. And there was going to be a deal between Michael Howard and a chap called Hague, this youngster, William Hague. And Hague went round long past his bedtime to Michael Howard's flat, was given a couple of glasses of champagne and said, "Oh, yes, yes, I'm going to support you." And then when he got home, his mum said, "What have you done, William?" And he explained, and she said, "I don't think you should be out with the rougher sort of boy." So he had to ring Michael Howard and say, "Sorry, I can't come out to play after all. Mum says I've got to play by myself," which is what he's doing.
It struck me that 3.5% of the Tory party are now standing for the leadership.
But it's also wonderful because there's so many of them lost their seats that the shadow cabinet now hardly exists, and good old Major has now appointed himself leader of the opposition and shadow defence secretary and shadow foreign secretary. And then it shows he has got a sense of humour. A shadow Scottish secretary, he has jointly appointed William Hague and Michael Howard. Seeing how well they work together, he decided they can share the job.
Yes, it's William Hague, who is 36 in human years, but 58 in Hague years. If successful, he'd be the youngest leader since Pitt the Younger and the boldest since Pitt the Elder. But whatever happens, he'll be joining a long line known as the Absolute Pitts. Nick Revel, who wants no whip-round for his party abroad?
This must be Blair saying that he's going to put controls over foreign contributions to political parties, which I think is an important measure. It's interesting how they have shelved the Freedom of Information Act. They won't tell us why, but they've shelved it. But, it's about foreign contributions, isn't it? And I think it's mainly a gesture of great generosity by Tony Blair towards the Tory party, because the Tory party get more foreign contributions anonymously. And obviously, being the gentlemen that they are, they only accept them out of politeness. You know, they don't really want to be burdened with all this cash.
It'll put Harris back in profit.
That's right, yeah. It's a moot point whether the Scottish and Welsh Conservative Associations are allowed to hold jumble sales now, obviously, because they haven't got any MPs there, so would that be foreign contributions? But apparently it's OK for tourists still to give Neil Hamilton a quid for his copy of The Big Issue.
Indeed, yes, Prime Minister Tony Blair will announce a ban on foreign funding of parties in the coming Queen's speech. Contributions to Labour funds will be referred to the Nolan Committee, and if there's any hint of malpractice, Martin Bell automatically becomes Prime Minister. Nick Clark, who has declared a lack of interest in matters of interest?
This is Mr Gordon Brown, and he's decided that the old lady can do it on her own, more or less. I don't want to go too far down that track, obviously. But he thinks the Bank of England has been interfered with long enough and that she should be allowed to tidy her skirts under her seat and carry on regardless and fix her own interest rates.
Worried me that Norman Lamont backed him on that one.
And Nigel Lawson, they both said, "This is brilliant. A Tory Chancellor should have done it." I thought, you were Tory Chancellor. It's also, you know, a great start for this new socialist government. Day one, they hand over control of the economy to the Bank of England. Day two, they appoint the chairman of BP as Trade and Industry Minister. By next week, Thatcher will be in the cabinet somewhere.
Chancellor Gordon Brown decided to allow the Bank of England to set its own interest rates. He claimed this was the most responsible move, as having looked at all the evidence, he'd decided he couldn't possibly be trusted to look after them himself. Tory critics say this proves how inexperienced Labour are in government. Chancellors are meant to give things away just before elections, not straight after them. So, Alan, listen to this. Alan, which freeze has caused a chill in international relations?
I think this is Chris Smith. It's Britain's answer to Melina Mercouri. quite literally. Because she committed her life to getting the Elgin Marbles back from the British Museum. Chris Smith, being the new Tory that he is now the Secretary of State for Heritage. Britain's heritage being largely imperial plunder. If you're a good right-wing New Labour man, you want to keep the Elgin Marbles in England. That's what Chris Smith is going to do, along with Cleopatra's Needle. And I suppose if the Eiffel Tower came on the market, Mr. Smith would be over there.
It was kind of the Greeks to wait for 20 minutes after the election victory before asking, wasn't it? That showed real restraint, I thought.
These are the Elgin Marbles, which the new Heritage Secretary Chris Smith has said will not be returned to Greece. They were acquired from Greece in 1803 when Lord Elgin swapped the marbles for three conkers and an action man. At present, the marbles are wonderfully preserved and displayed at the British Museum. No one's allowed to touch them, and anyone who does is immediately arrested for handling stolen goods. So the scores at the end of round one are everybody 4. And we start round two with an item spotted in The Guardian.
West Midlands police have put out Braille application forms for a driver's job.
Well, thanks to the many, many people who sent that in. Francis, where is the NHS replacing IVF with DIY?
Well, this must be some exciting initiative taken by our fantastic new Labour government to do with artificial insemination. That sort of stuff, test tubes. Mm. It must be something Harriet Harman has done while my back was turned. No, it's Frank Dobson, isn't it, who's in charge of pregnancy now. I can't really keep up with these things. Nick seems to know all
that. Aren't they abolishing fertility treatment on the NHS or something like that as part of Frank Field's new, social welfare reforms? Get rid of children
you
and
you just
that.
Go down and buy a little chemistry set from Toys R Us.
Yeah.
Try it at home and see what happens.
I didn't understand that DIY reference. I thought DIY was already an essential part of IVF. what I used to call cupboard love.
why does all this talk of DIY in this context make me think of Michael Portillo? I don't know why that name comes into my head. Didn't he used to be an MP? Actually, I met him the other day, and he said, do you want fries with that?
Birmingham Health Authority is proposing to ration NHS fertility treatment. Savings have had to be made in the Assisted Conception Service, or as it's locally known, the In-Out, In-Out Patients Department. Nick, who slagged off his auntie at 4?
Who slagged off his auntie? Oh, right. Auntie. BBC 4, Channel 4. This is referring to the rather wonderful, marvellous Michael Jackson, and I'm not just saying that because I have a couple of treatments awaiting consideration at Channel 4, who's just taken over as head of Channel 4, and he was slagging the BBC for being too middle-aged and male and southern in its outlook. And I mean, if I can take a straw poll of our panel here, do we think that makes any kind of sense? No, everybody's got their hands up agreeing that it's ridiculous. He said they don't take enough notice of chapesses, what's the phrase? Women, that's it.
And those northern types, William Hague, people like that.
Oh, yes.
License payers should not confuse the Michael Jackson with the other Michael Jackson. To watch the pop star, you need a black and white license. Jackson defended Channel 4's output, in particularly singling out Eurotrash as, and this is a genuine quote, a witty and intelligent programme. This from the man who commissioned Ready, Steady, Cook. The other Nick, listen to this. What golden opportunity saw money thrown down a hole in the ground?
I really like this story. This is about the Pacific Ocean somewhere, isn't it? This is, I can't remember, Brunei or somewhere like that, where they've discovered this great gold mine, a firm called Briex in Canada. And they found lots and lots of gold there. And no one was made suspicious by the fact that the way they found this gold was a large sign with a finger arrow saying ingot. And then underneath was a large bar wrapped in gold foil. And they thought this was a sign that there was lots and lots of gold there. And on the basis of this, they sold these shares, which went up to £133 per share. Nobody noticed that there was anything remotely wrong. The fact that there isn't any more gold in there than there is in my teeth is neither here nor there. And the shares are now worth less than my teeth. That's it, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. The so-called gold strike in Borneo, thought to have been one of the largest ever at the time, turns out to be a con, possibly the worst, involving tiny amounts of gold since Gerald Ratner gave up selling wedding rings. Alan, how will TVs go both ways?
For those of you who wonder why Tony Blair flew out to see Rupert Murdoch, I don't think this could be the reason, but henceforth, B Sky B and British Telecom are going to see to it that nobody needs to go out at all anymore. There will be 200 digital channels, showing people cleaning their teeth and flossing their feet and eating things and wanting to go to theatre, and you will simply press a tit on your television and it will be delivered forthwith. It's shopping by television. It's ghastly. You should all live in holes in the ground. I was thinking that when I saw that pet. It's called the cyber pet. Do you see it?
Come on, you might as well now.
I was just always exactly the same as this, that people have these pets, they keep them in their pockets, and they're electronic pets. And if you don't look after them, they die in your pocket. And you don't have to have a dog or a horse or a goldfish or a lizard. And it's going to be exactly the same with B Sky B. We should all sit in these holes in the ground under New Labour, buying pets and cybernetic children and
Briex shares.
And life.
It's going to be great on the porn channels, interactive TV, isn't it?
This is the advent of interactive TV to be introduced by British Interactive Broadcasting. Lucky viewers will be able to buy groceries, clothes and electrical goods. Though obviously if you need to buy a digital decoder, you'll have to go down to the shops to get it. And while you're there, you might as well stock up on groceries and clothes. It will be possible to connect straight into the local supermarket and choose goods with an infrared scanner. The machine will automatically list your items on screen while an electronic digital voice synthesizer utters the words, "And how much is this one, Trice?" Despite the technological revolution, there are still thousands of complaints from viewers about retuning Channel 5. Despite having repeated calls from engineers, they can still receive it. At the end of round two, the scores are Francis and Nick Revel 8, but Alan and Nick Clark edging into the lead with 9 points. Francis, which Grand Master is suffering the deep blues?
Oh, I think Kasparov is the victim of a landslide. He's been playing some interactive chess with one of Rupert Murdoch's set-top decoding apparatuses, and he lost. He's been beaten hollow by a computer.
It's drawn at the moment,
isn't it? No, but he's
won all two draws. It goes to penalties next.
He's been beaten by a plate of chips, hasn't he? That's the trouble. And indeed, the Tory party could have been as well, probably, this last time.
Well, Deep Blue, I think, is probably standing for leadership, isn't he or she? Or
the world chess champion Garry Kasparov lost a game against the IBM Deep Blue chess computer. Kasparov's defeat came when he missed the opportunity to draw. He explained afterwards that having played all the grandmasters, he wasn't used to an opponent with such intense charisma. He had won the first game when the computer mistook a bishop for a queen. It turned out that the programmer responsible had been confused by attending last year's General Synod of the Church of England. Microchip technology is presenting an ever steeper challenge to chess players. Last month, Britain's number one, Nigel Short, narrowly lost out after a 3-hour struggle against a microwave oven. Nick Revel, listen to this.
Remember when you were young? You shone like the sun.
Nick, whose performance failed to shine?
Yeah, this was Mr. Helfgott, the hero of Shine, who has been touring on the back of the film, and it seems like there may have been some way that the movie glamorized reality and made it seem other than it was, which has brought me to my foundations about the nature of movie making. He's in London at the moment, isn't he, or was, and when he was in the States, it was the same rapturous receptions by the audience, but all the critics felt that he was useless. I think the critics are mixing up show business and art, really. That's the main problem here. Because the critics, you know, it's art if the critics like you and nobody comes, and it's show business if everybody comes and has a good time, but the critics hate you. Then if the critics like you and everybody comes, then the critics won't like you for very long after that. And if the critics don't like you and nobody comes, then you're Edwina Curry's daughter trying to make a pop career. That's the basic categories of show business, I think.
She's got a single out later this month.
Edwina?
Debbie, her daughter, yeah. Debbie Curry. And poor old Edwina, desperately trying to publicise it. First of all, managed to lose the Tories the election to try and attract a bit of attention to herself. And now, did you see this week, she's had a nose job.
That's right.
Purely, as far as I can see, in order to publicise her daughter's single. And I think it's tinkering with the problem. I would have thought a brain transplant would be... But full marks to her.
He was right about the election there, wasn't he?
In fact, Debbie Curry gave a concert, didn't she, in a venue in South London that seated 1,400 people, and four tickets were sold.
Why are we going along with this bloody self-fulfilling prophecy? I mean, we are all conspiring to make this awful Debbie person very famous. By mentioning how non-famous she is and how nobody turns up at her things. And here we are. She's on the news quiz. On the strength of the end of her mother's nose, but she's no longer there. Record she hasn't issued, seats that nobody was sitting in, and now she's famous. It is really quite extraordinary. She'll be leader of the Tory party. It's Debbie Curry.
Nick, where is there nothing doing for the bill?
It's a town in Suffolk called Great Melham. It's near the A12, anyway. I do know that in Suffolk. And there hasn't been any crime there since the year 1720. And, in fact, the entire country is going to be reconditioned on the same lines as this particular town. It has one policeman, and everyone's nice to each other. And Jack Straw wants it to be the model for us all, and I think it's a very fine thing, too.
Before the repeat of this gets out, that town would have been razed to the ground. it's the Debbie Curry story all over again, isn't it? I mean, here's a village
on
its own.
It's a bit of a challenge, isn't it, for the chaps?
No villainy. They stole a bit of fence 2 years ago.
No, it was an electrical cable, in fact.
Don't argue with me. I told you where the village was.
Oh, that's right.
Where do you suddenly get off knowing about the fence?
Alan, whose family role is down to Grandmother Nature?
They can't stop surveying people. They're now surveying little old ladies on the street. They're mugging them. Apparently grandmas are very important in the raising of children. Is that so? Yes, you're nodding. He's nodding, listeners. Yeah. This man at home on radio, he is nodding. The light is glinting off his glasses, and he's wearing this terrific tie. Because he knows the answer, and I know it too, is that grandmothers are better at bringing up children than parents are. Of course they are, because grandmothers can go home afterwards, and they take them to the zoos, and they're nice to them. And
Yes, Alan, it's the so-called grandmother effect. New research has examined the theory of evolution and explained Granny's place. It's in front of you in the queue at the post office. It's now thought that nature designed the menopause to prevent women having more children of their own so they can devote time to the next generation. Grandmothers play a vital role in the female childbearing cycle. When a woman can no longer bear children, she can pack them off to Granny's for the weekend until she can't bear them either. So the scores at the end of round three are Francis and Nick Revel 12, but Alan and Nick Clark still just in the lead with 13.
Happy.
And before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Times sent in by Brinnock Parry of Powys.
Dr. Carey makes clear that the church will never bless gay marriages. In the 1980s, the issue of homosexuality was just beginning to emerge as a problem for all the churches, he says. Now we're in a different ballgame.
Francis, listen to this.
The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. China, we can only lose. and our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
Francis, how did a rat on a hot thatched roof bring the house down?
Well, it's about a poisonous rat that self-destructed, I think. But that's enough about Michael Portillo. It's a house in Norfolk, a thatched cottage, which burnt down. And the insurance company came and inspected it and said, oh, it's obvious what's happened here. A rat has been depressed by something or other. Election result. Take a lot of poison, including phosphorus, and then crawled up to the attic to die. And when it died and the phosphorus was exposed to the air, there was an almighty explosion. The whole house burnt down. And the owners of the house aren't entirely convinced by this, but the only alternative explanation that the insurance people came up with was it might have been a blackbird or something which perched on the thatch. And they said, well, how could that set fire to it? They said, oh, well, it was smoking a cigarette at the time.
Nick Revel, who was teed off at being thrown out on his earring?
This was extraordinary, wasn't it? This golfer who has been wearing an earring since 1976, and he's suddenly been chucked out of the golf club, of which he's been a member for some time. Apparently, ladies are allowed to wear earrings at this club because that's part of a woman's natural dress code, because they spring from the womb with their ears pierced and little diamond studs in there, obviously. But I never realised that golfers were that fashion conscious, really. I mean, you know, they're the only sector of society who attempt to dress like American tourists.
Dr. Stephen Glasgow was expelled from the Ridgeway Golf Club near Caerphilly for wearing an earring. We're not small-minded or anything, said club president Lieutenant Colonel Poof-Hater Bigot. It's just that it made him look like one of those totally unacceptable types we don't want around here. I believe they're called women. However, they did say that Mr. Tiger Woods, a young black man, would be welcome at the Ridgeway Club any time to water the greens or rake the bunkers. Dr. Glasgow's suitability had been discussed for some time. He'd been accused by other members of having a brain the size of a golf ball. And there's nothing they hate more than an intellectual. Nick Clark, who's polishing up the promenades with mop tops?
I just remember that the exploding rat was in Puddlecock.
It was. Did you know that?
Well, you just said to give my friend
I wouldn't have disclosed it had I known, Nick.
Anyway, no, the Beatles are going to be featuring in the Henry Wood Promenade concerts, introduced by Des Lynham, also featuring Frank Zappa. And the other good news for the Beatles is that Ringo Starr's derelict house in Toxteth is becoming a national monument. It's a good week for the Beatles.
They were going to make Pete Best's house the national monument, then change their mind at the last minute.
They haven't, as far as I know, asked Ms. Curry to take part in the promenade concerts, but it's only a matter of time.
David Helfgott plays Debbie Curry's greatest hits.
It's the news that
bloody lucky Portillo doesn't play the piano, isn't it?
It was the news that the year's promenade concerts will feature music by the Beatles and Frank Zappa. Mm-hmm. Proms chief Nicholas Kenyon explained that if Sir Henry Wood was still alive today, that's what he would be doing. And in fact, if he was still alive today, he'd be 128, so he'd have become a Radio 2 disc jockey instead. Mr. Kenyon did rule out contributions from two contemporary icons, Andrew Lloyd Webber and the Spice Girls. Lord Lloyd Webber said he was very disappointed, as he believed his music is greatly appreciated by the public. But then he also believes his wife married him for his looks. Alan, your last question. Who are out to prove that size is important at your convenience?
The Women's Institute has stopped making jam and voting Conservative and is now going round England making sure the lavatories are large enough for members of the Women's Institute to sit on.
In, drape not themselves on, over Alan, the side. In. It's in. It's the distance between the loo and the door, not on.
Well, they've got to sit on it to find out how far you are from the door. I mean, it is complicated by the fact they wear Lyle stockings that are 4 inches thick. The average Women's Institute member looks like Ozymandias. Especially after they've shut the loo door, no? The entire body can go over the wall.
The trouble is taking...
No, I don't know why they're doing it. I mean, these women are obsessed.
It's taking the jam in there that's the trouble, isn't it? It's if you take the jam in as well, then there isn't room. I particularly like the title of the survey is called Skip to the Loo. They found that the average distance when you put a Women's Institute member's knee in the appropriate position and the outswinging door is 3 inches. And quite frankly, it's not enough. And in Tony Blair's Britain, of course, it will be bigger, that gap.
I wish there were a men's institute, and they would go around the country seeing whether the urinals were large enough for men's. I suppose they will be in Blair's Britain, won't they?
This is the Women's Institute, who are out to collect measurements of ladies' public toilets to see whether they're too small. One woman accidentally went into a gents and was shocked by what men have to put up with. Conditions were so bad in one Hampstead loo, she said, two poor men were forced to share one cubicle. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from the Morning Star, daily paper of the Communist Party of Britain, putting a brave face on the Communist candidate's successes in the general election. It says, Monty Goldman, who secured 298 votes in Hackney South and Shoreditch, said that he was pleased with the result, up on the 220 votes won by the party when it last contested the seat in 1983. Martin Levy, the party's candidate in Newcastle East and Wool's End, said that every one of his 163 votes, 0.4%, was a clear signal for a socialist alternative.
Nick Revel.
It's from the Evening Standard on Tuesday. Slightly different in that there's no real ambiguity here, but it did make me smile. The wife of fallen Tory Neil Hamilton told millions of TV viewers today of their despair at life on the dole. It just made me smile.
Nick Clark.
Well, listeners to this programme may remember that I'm a bit of a fan of the special competition for dodgy titles of books. 90,000 titles were entered last year, and to give you some of the losers, they included God's Chewable Vitamin C for the Spirit, Manufacturer of Domestic Appliances Not Elsewhere Classified, Old Tractors and the Men Who Love Them, and one or two past winners, just before I come to this year's winner, the Second International Workshop on Nude Mice, Oral Sadism and the Vegetarian Personality, and How to Avoid Huge Ships. But this year's winner was... This year's winner, which I know you're going to like this one, is Greek Rural Postmen and Their Cancellation Numbers. And The Times points out that its rarefied appeal is likely to be limited to stamp collectors with an interest in Greek postmarks.
Alan.
Well, great coincidence as one here that's really in the temper of this entire programme. I like the people involved. It's from the Potter's Bar Gazette, Simon. It says there was a lively exchange at the annual general meeting of the Winchgate Tennis Club when Mrs. Anne Jopling said that the proposed scheme for 5-year subscriptions was nothing less than a racket. The on-sec, Mr. Jonathan Stevenson, said that this was balls.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final scores, which are Francis and Nick Revel, 16, but Alan and Nick Clark confounding the pollster's predictions with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from The Guardian.
A man arrested for running down a street in Melbourne while completely naked has been released without charge. Police let Peter Archer go on learning that he was a runaway from the mortuary in which a doctor had just officially pronounced him dead.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Curran, Francis Ween, Nick Revel and Nick Clark. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer. The producer was Alad Evans.